You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, Calvin Butenhoff coming to you live from our home at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. You can call. You can text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Our guest is an associate professor and developmental psychologist in the Department of Educational Policy and Leadership in the College of Education at Marquette University. Dr. Gabriel Velez is our guest. Good morning, Dr. Velez. Thanks so much for joining us. How are you?
Good morning, Jane. Thank you. I'm doing well this morning. Getting excited for Thanksgiving. The weather's a little crummy, but it's winter time. So
yeah, hang on to your hat when you walk outside. It is a little crazy. But we thought what a great time to talk about teens and technology and even adults and technology. The day before Thanksgiving, when half of the table is going to be on their phones while you're passing around this stuffing and driving everybody crazy.
Yep, that is 100% right. And you know, I was out at a coffee shop this morning and I saw someone with Jonathan Haidt's book, The Anxious Generation, which is all about this topic. And I was thinking, you know, it's on people's minds.
It really is. I don't think we appreciate, Dr. Velez, just how damaging phones and social media are for all of us. Right?
Yes. And that's where it begins. You know, I think there's so much focus on youth and on students and on schools and all that's right, but it really begins with us as adults. You know, I've talked to some young people. I remember in one of my classes we were talking about some of these issues and questions, and they said, you know, our teachers are telling us ban your phones, you know, put them away, you can't have them in school. And then they're like, they'll give us a worksheet, and then I see they're sitting there kind of like scrolling on some kind of app on their phone. And you know, I'm like, yeah, it's a challenge for all of us, but if we're gonna focus on young people, we got to think about ourselves too.
And we're seeing now in Wisconsin, there's something in California now in Wisconsin, they want to ban cell phones in school. And I want to open up, and if you're a listener, you know, I do not have children. I do not have children in school. So I feel like mine could be a very cut and dry, simple opinion as like, well, yeah, don't have the phones. Cause back in my day, .. But I mean, tell us what the arguments for kids having phones in school start there, because we have very much said like, yeah, we're going to ban phones in school. You don't need them. And it's a distraction. But there are people out there, parents, people who are not kids in school who say it might not be the best idea, but are there a viable argument saying kids should have access to them aside from social media, which we're going to get to?
Sure. You know, I can almost group it into sort of three areas, I think. You know, on the side of the parents, right, and we've heard this before, there's the kind of concern around, like, if I need to contact my student, right, or if they need to contact me. And that, you know, is just, I think, tied into larger questions and issues where parents these days are more stressed about safety, about being in contact, and also, I would say, about surveillance of their students, right? Mm-hmm. So smartphones also allow for this ability to sort of track your student because you know it's on them, you know it's on. You say, oh, I should be able to get in touch with them. I think in the educational side, there's a bit of a case to be made to say that smartphones can facilitate certain types of learning, right? I mean, like any technology, it's a tool. And so it's a little bit of how you use it. You know, I, in my class, for instance, sometimes have students doing in-classroom polls where they pull up their phone and they use a QR code that they see on the screen and they can contribute some thought relatively anonymously that we then see, you know, on the board kind of in front of us. And then the third part that I would say as a developmental psychologist that we don't talk about enough is that we're meant to sort of use schools to teach young people about how to use things well and healthily, right? I mean, think about this with like peer conflict, right? One of the great parts about schools is if we do it well, we can teach young people how do you engage when you've got a conflict with, you know, your friend, with an adult, with someone else. And I do think there's a case to be made that phones are a real huge challenge, but we could also structure teaching kids about, like, how do you engage with this healthily? How do you use it as something that's going to benefit you rather than something that's just constantly distracting you or tapping into sort of your mental health in a negative way?
You make such a good point, though, Dr. Velez, about this is a tool. Now let's learn how to properly use this tool so we don't injure ourselves with said tool, right?
Yeah. Yep. And I think the challenge there becomes, you know, we say tool, we think of like a hammer, right? And to some degree, you know, there's a company out there producing a hammer for us to use, but it's not producing a hammer that will sort of be constantly drawing our attention and constantly pulling at us, right? And social media and smartphones are set up by companies that are making money off of our attention. So it's, you know, it's a tool, but it certainly is, you know, a little bit of a different one.
I think there's an important point you're making there too, is, you know, it's the adult's responsibility where we're talking about, you know, mentors, teachers, or parents to teach kids how to make it in the world using the tools they have available to them. And I think that then puts a responsibility on those older folks to understand how those young people use these tools, because people who are Gen Z were born into cell phones, born into tablets. They probably don't know a life before that. And it takes the responsibility of the adult up higher to understand what they're going through to say, this is what you need to do. Because we had a slide presentation that was sent that you use that says, basically, when adults try to teach kids, we're trying to teach them from our point of view and our experience. Well, go do X, because that's what I did. And that's what my dad and my granddad did. But guess what? That's not how it works.
It's not applicable anymore.
So kids aren't going to do it that way. They're going to find their own way. So it is up to the adults to say, I have to meet kids where they are too, to understand their struggles, their needs, and that what comes through these, whether it's social media, whether it's just the phone itself. I think it's not just about teens and technology, it's about how are adults part of the conversation and being responsible as well.
Yeah, 100% yes. And I think, you know, too often we assume things about young people. And I love the efforts and initiatives you hear out there where they're leading the charge, mm-hmm. right? And like, there's a great organization in Milwaukee called Disconnect, which is about empowering young people to sort of take action around digital technologies and encourage other young people and advocate in educational spaces. And that's really beginning with them. And I think if we try and do things from top down, right, we're just going to end up in a world where they're sneaking their phones in their backpack, mm-hmm.
yes.
looking at them in the bathroom, and we're trying to police and surveil and all of that.
Yeah, when you tell a teenager not to do something, that frequently will have the opposite effect.
100%.
I know adults who are the same way. If you are just joining us, Dr. Gabriel Velez is our guest. He is at the College of Education at Marquette University, and we're talking about technology and all of us, not mm-hmm. just teenagers. Is there a certain amount of time, Dr. Velez, that we should limit ourselves to on our devices? Is it 3 hours? You're done. You know, 3 hours a week and you're done.
Yep. You know, that is the challenge with some of these things, is that I think we always are looking for the easy, clear cut, right? Mm-hmm. This comes, you know, about, like, I get the question often, you hear, like, what age should I introduce a smartphone to my child? And, you know, there's some great campaigns out there that say, like, wait until 8, because 8th grade is a nice sort of, like, direct cutoff. I do think, to that point, you know, it's not necessarily about limiting the time. I would say it's becoming aware of how we're using that time. And that's where we can use our phones, you know, and our tools and apps to our advantage, because there are lots of great apps and tools out there that will track your time. And I do this even sometimes myself. And so that makes me aware, my gosh, I'm spending, you know, X amount of time on my phone, or I'm opening it. You know, I've done that and I've noticed, like, I open it, you know, hundreds of times a day. And that just makes me aware, my gosh, like, I'm looking at my phone that often. And so, you know, I think rather than sort of box ourselves into one size fits all, I think it's just making sure we're attentive and aware of the ways and the time that we are spending in that. And then, you know, it's a bit of a challenge, but asking ourselves to reflect and say, is that how I want to be spending that time? Is it healthy for me? How am I feeling about that?
I thought there's an article in the Washington Post from this morning, Dr. Velez, that says, why constantly checking your phone can drain your focus and memory. You might underestimate how often you look at your device, and you might be paying a price with more attention and memory lapses. So we're getting dumber.
Dear Washington Post, shut up.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I'll have to go look at that later. But sometimes, you know, you need this research. It also tells you things we already know, right? Like,
yeah.
I doubt there are very few people that read that and said,
surprise,
that is groundbreaking. Yeah. You know, but we need that.
And I want to, you know, that topic of when to introduce a cell phone or devices or that digital world to your kid, you know, I think that also brings back what I was just talking about as far as not, I don't want to say the responsibility of parents. I don't want to tell a parent how to raise their child, but the opportunities to sit down and say, all right, you're going into eighth grade. It's time to get you a phone or time to get you a device. Let's have these conversations and talk about it, because I'm willing to bet that these cell phone bans that are coming through and people's attitudes, they don't take into consideration the children's opinions. Their opinions are valid on why they may or may not need them. You have to have these conversations and say, why do you think you need these for school? Okay, great. We'll do X, Y, and Z, but let's limit your screen time. Let's talk about what you're looking at. Be open and honest about these things, because I read an article in the JS, an opinion piece from a woman who, you know, she said from the moment she got her son an Xbox and a cell phone, that it was the slow decline into disappearing into the world of social media where it's not real connections. And that led to drug use and that led to his death. And I'm not saying I'm going to go that far, but it is about being open to the conversation about what your kids are looking at when you introduce them, especially at such a young age, which seems like you almost, I have to imagine there's more pressure on parents to introduce digital devices than even for their children.
Yeah, I think you're really right. You know, so I have three young kids. I have a 7, a 5, and a 3-year-old. And, you know, one of the things that I feel very fortunate about is we're raising them in a world where actually we know a lot of other parents who are talking about this and are waiting to give their kids devices, right? And I
That's
think
great.
5, 10 years ago, that was not the case, right? It was much more likely that there were the parents who were giving the devices and you felt the pressure if you were saying, maybe we should wait and hold off.
Yeah.
You know, but the other point that you mentioned about that, Greg, is I think it's also just like critical that we're thinking about what's going on in the schools and there's communication across that, because, you know, I'm realizing my oldest son is getting more engaged with screens and technology at school than he is at home. But also then I'm reading, you know, a lot of schools are not really careful and thoughtful. Like we think that schools would have all these guardrails, right? But there's a lot of good evidence that sometimes kids are put in, you know, front of a screen and the teacher's going and helping some other student one-on-one. And there isn't actually a lot of oversight or control or sort of regulation around how that other student is using the screen.
That's so interesting though, Dr. Velez, that you're meeting more parents who are waiting to introduce that social media, because I can imagine, oh, you poor thing, you're one of Dr. Velez's kids. How sad for you. You don't have a smartphone.
Yep. And then your kid is coming to you saying like, oh, but Johnny and Betty. Exactly. And
everybody
and,
else
know,
has one. Them. Yes. Why yep. are we so odd?
Yeah. I feel like there was a time when this became more prevalent in children's lives. A lot of parents were like, you're not getting one until high school. And that was just the thing. You don't get social media. You don't need
it's
that.
Like getting your ears pierced.
And then it got younger and younger because they're like, oh, they've got games on here and they'll be entertaining themselves. And now, as you're saying, there's more thought into it. There's more possible damage. There's more research. So it's like, when is a good time to do this? We decide as a family, not by societal pressures.
We're going to continue our conversation with Dr. Gabriel Velez on the other side. You can always join us if you have a question, call or text at 855-752-4842. Stay close. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air, coming to you across the vast statewide, countrywide. You can even pick us up around the world on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back. She can't help. She don't mean.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning. Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Calvitini on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We are joined by Dr. Gabriel Velez, Associate Professor, Developmental Psychologist in the College of Education at Marquette University. And we're talking about our phones and us. And we had a couple texts come in, Dr. Velez, that I just wanted to share. John from Milwaukee says, I say ban phones for everyone. LOL. And Sue from Franklin says, we got our daughter a phone when she was 12, and we were pressured to hold out for that long. Mm-hmm. She still did great in school, but her reading test scores dropped over the next couple of years. And I think it was because she was on the phone more than she was reading like she used to. All worked out okay. She's now 27. She has her master's.
There you go.
So she came out on top. But it can be really detrimental for us. I saw a report earlier this week. We have six-year-old girls now who are asking their moms if they're fat because of what they're seeing on social media. That's horrifying.
Yeah, that, you know, the potential is what's scary, I think, too, right? You know, and I think if, you know, you're a parent out there and you're worried and you're getting super concerned, you know, any given individual young person, you don't want to just assume, right, all these bad things, right, that they're seeing pornography, that they're exposed to this, that it's going to destroy them. But when we look across our country and across, you know, lots of young people, it is affecting a lot of them negatively. And so it is something we need to be talking about, thinking about, and developing policies in schools and states and, you know, in these different ways.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I think, too, I think it's also particularly for young men who aren't getting out, who aren't socializing, who are building their whole world online.
Yeah. And that's where, you know, I love that you bring that up because, you know, it's not happening in a vacuum, right? That's the other thing we need to keep in mind. So there are pressures right now for being young men, and there are all sorts of other dynamics going on. And young people are feeling like less connected. And for boys in particular, that can be hard when they maybe also feel social pressures, emotional pressures, and then phones and video games and pornography too that they can access on these. Like, they go down a deeper hole. And so, you know, I think we need to be attentive, right, too, that it's not the same for all young people either. And so different groups, it's going to affect them in different ways.
I think something that I saw from the PowerPoint that our senior producer Tucker provided for us in our research is that also, you know, the two major things that hit me was, one, the discernible and trackable study that shows that kids are just getting less sleep, too, and as well as the teens who meet up in real life every day, it's going down because, I mean, I won't lie, social media, I think in its infancy, in its most altruistic form, was here to connect us. And it has, there are definite positive attributes to how we can affect the world by being on social media. But there is a loneliness epidemic, and it's something that is, it's hit adults more, but it's, kids are almost growing up in it from the start. Just like they're growing up with social media and technology, they understand that it's, you're not truly connected. And this, you know, whether it's Snapchat, WhatsApp, it's not a real
relationship.
It's not a real relationship. And it can, you know, it can provide a lot of internal anxiety and problems, which kids are going through all the time.
Yeah. You know, Greg, that you had such a good point, because the other part about this is, you know, we're in a world where AI is taking off, and we're seeing more evidence that young people are engaging with chatbots like their friends.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's part of my concern, where exactly what you're describing, right? It's one thing if it's a real person that you're connecting with virtually and you're not getting the in-person connection. It's a whole other thing if it's virtual and
yes,
technology. And so, you know, that's where some of my fear comes. We're talking, you know, a lot about cheating with AI in schools, but we're not talking about the possibilities for young people sort of going to AI chatbots rather than friends or teachers or other real people and connecting in that way.
Well, and that's why I said, too, there is a concern about building an entire online world for yourself where you never have to go outside of that for human connection. You can have your AI best friend. You can have your girlfriend who's on OnlyFans. You can do all of these things without ever leaving your house, and you never have to actually get out in the world and have face-to-face conversations. And it's, you're missing so much.
Yes. And the other part, and I gotta go back to my sort of background as a developmental psychologist, is relationships and in-person connection matter so much for so much of parts of development, right? Of growing, of learning, of becoming, you know, fully sort of functional adults and citizens. And so when I work with schools and teachers, you know, sometimes rather than focusing on what can we do about the technology, which can feel really overwhelming, I say, let's really double down on how can we build relationships, right? What can you do to make more in-person connections for yourself with a young person or for young people with other young people? And, you know, then it kind of has a little bit of a positive strengths-based kind of like, how can we take this on?
I think that also brings back to the point of the responsibility of the mentor, the teacher, the parent. When we say there's so much going on in the world, they might look at us and say, like, what? Okay, take them out into the world. Show them what you love. Show them what's good out there. Don't just say, go out and play. Do something with them and expose them so they can understand, not just tell them that what they're doing is,
you know,
is
wrong.
Yeah. I think once again, it brings forth the idea that in this conversation, the adults have to meet the kids halfway and understand as much as they can what they're going through and be a tool to help as they're trying to understand the tools in their lives.
I completely agree. And I think it's the same also for AI. Like you're just saying, you know, we can't just ban it. We can't hide it and not talk about it. We need to meet them there, understand why they're using it, how they're feeling, and think about, okay, how can we then lead them to a healthier, more positive outcome and engagement with it?
Dr. Gabriel Velez is an associate professor and developmental psychologist in the Department of Educational Policy in the College of Education at Marquette University. Such an interesting discussion.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Dr. Velez. Yeah. Really, really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you both. This has been great.
Thanks. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
You too. Yeah,
and
have a good one.
None of us will be on our phones tomorrow.
Oh, I will be.
All.
Oh, I will be.
Not
yeah.
Just put them away.
I will be.
We have news coming up next, and then we're going to lighten it up with some audio sorbet, and we're going to talk about toys.
Yeah.
That's coming up next. You are listening to Matt and Air on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. And happy Thanksgiving. Welcome to Matt and Air on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Bach, Sweet Calby on the board, coming to you live from our home at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We are delighted to be joined by our friend and colleague and host of Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Pat Kreitlow is here for the segment that we call Audio Sorbet. Where we lighten things up, kind of like this whole show, and get away from the news and talk about lighter-hearted things. And because today is Thanksgiving, and Greg, you've talked about this a lot, all appetizer Thanksgiving.
Yes.
Ooh. Forgo the turkey, forgo the green beans, all apps, all the time. What would be on your menu for an all appetizer Thanksgiving? 855-752-4842.
I'm not saying you can't have any of those things either. I'm just saying reimagine them in appetizer form.
In appetizer form. So like little turkey sandwiches?
Oh. Little turkey sandwiches, little sliders, or maybe.
I got it.
Yeah, okay. All right.
My choice of appetizer would be buffalo chicken dip. Let's just make it buffalo turkey dip. I feel like I've just ruined it, but no, yeah,
that would work.
Buffalo turkey dip.
That would work. Buffalo
and
chicken
I love
dip
buffalo
is
buffalo chicken dip,
and
oh,
it's really super easy to make too, isn't it, Pat?
Mm-hmm. It is. Yes.
That, it's just what cream cheese and some buffalo sauce.
It's also very filling. Like it's very much a I gotta just take it little by little. Like I can't eat all of it.
You do?
Yes, because buffalo for some reason that dip, it's like two chips and I am asleep. It's so heavy.
Oh.
It's just for me. Hey.
Yeah. You can buffalo chicken all you want.
More for you.
I think that would define torture for me is, you know, two servings. I'm like, you're done, Pat. But
I just,
Just a little more, please.
Just a little more. Pretty please.
855-752-4842. We're putting together an all appetizer Thanksgiving. What should be on the list? 855-75-CIVIC. We've got the buffalo chicken dip.
So it has to be the Thanksgiving stuff? So like cranberry nachos? Is that what we're talking about
here? No. It could be anything. That sounds disgusting. Because I'm thinking like I make a calzone. Mm-hmm. And so you take a pre-prepared pizza crust and you roll it out. And then you put like slices of salami and some onions and lots of cheese. And then you roll it up. And you bake it,
yeah.
And you slice it, and you serve it with a little pizza sauce.
There you go.
Or a little, you know, ragu on the side.
I can't think of anything but Parks and Rec when they did the same thing and they all got food poisoning.
Oh, thanks.
This is one of the funniest scenes
I've
ever.
I've made it numerous times. No one's died yet.
Oh, they didn't die either. They just really ruined their insides. I would that would be one where I'd have to again exercise self-control because appetizer like that's the problem we have and you've heard me talk about this many times is that our appetizer selection for Thanksgiving on the day is so bountiful and so delicious.
There's so much
from your basic meat and cheese and fruit and veggie to my mom's bringing chili dip today. You just get in on it and then by the time dinner is ready, you already have the meat sweats because you've eaten so much.
Or somebody asks you, you know, you've seen the joke, like, can I interest you in having 5 eggs for breakfast? No.
No.
Well, I brought some deviled eggs.
Yeah, exactly.
I can eat 5 of those, no problem. Yeah, that's right. Interesting. Yes.
Yeah, those don't happen in our house because Bridget has a huge aversion to eggs and that's fine. I mean, and that's fine. If anything, it's really saved me more than anything else because I could destroy a platter of deviled eggs because they're just so.
They're bite sized. That's my go to.
You
for
bite
many
them?
Years was stuffed mushrooms.
Oh,
stuffed mushrooms.
Actually, it was. I learned how to do this when we were much younger, and there was a lot of med school debt. A can of Underwood deviled ham and some cream cheese. Mix that together, put that inside your, you know, pull the stem. Oh, and the stems. Pull all the stems off the mushrooms, chop those up really fine. Mix it with the cream cheese and the deviled ham. Put a glop of that inside each mushroom. 10 minutes, 400 degrees.
Ooh.
Irresistible.
Ooh, that sounds really, really yummy.
Oh, I wonder if my mother-in-law is going to make boy caviar. I can't explain it other than it's avocado, some beans, onions. It's a dip. It's not like guacamole where it's like smooth. It's just cut up everything, throw it in, put some oil on it, and you just chomp it up like there's no tomorrow. It's delicious.
We are putting together our all appetizer menu for Thanksgiving. Give me anything you want. Doesn't have to be Thanksgiving related. All appetizer Thanksgiving at 855-752-4842. Tammy in Eau Claire says, don't forget artichoke spinach dip with garlic.
Good Lord.
Love artichoke dip.
So if we want to include the classics, something you could do, and I'm trying to, it's a turkey cordon bleu, like small turkey cordon bleus. Just everything you do, like, or even like, I can't do a Benedict, but a turkey cordon bleu open face. So it's just everything up top, and then you just pull them on little biscuits, and you just pop them, and that I would absolutely do that. Stuffing. Oh, you know, this could be disastrous, but it would be worth a shot. Wonton stuffing. You wrap up
stuffing filled wontons.
Stuffing filled wontons, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's potential there.
Oh my goodness. With a gravy dipping sauce. Oh my God.
Shasta, by the way, from Eau Claire, sent in her stuffing recipe at 855-752-4842. I make my stuffing with mushrooms, sage sausage, mozzarella cubes, and honey crisp apples.
Okay.
Wow.
The Honeycrisp apples give me pause just because sweet and savory is it's a line for me for that. But it's not like I wouldn't try it.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Roger from Stevens Point. Everyone knows the flavor from jellied cranberry sauce is in the ridges from the can.
Well, of course.
Absolutely, yes. Roger. You have to have the canned raspberries. I am
absolutely team slurp over here. I don't want that other stuff with the twigs and the stems and the seeds and the gravel in it.
Pat, we're talking about cranberry, not like weed.
So am I. That cranberry stuff is that people serve. You got to put it in a can.
I went to a Thanksgiving one year, and the person who was in charge of cranberry, who could have easily just bought two cans, slot them out onto a plate, and said, "There you go," and everyone would have been like
perfectly
yes.
happy.
Instead, he made a cranberry chutney, and I've never seen food not being taken quicker. No one cared. They were like, I don't know what it looked like. He had taken cranberries. Smashed them with his fingers and just put it in dirt and then said, "There you go."
Well, like, that's appetizing.
Like, ugh. Yeah, no one ate it. And also no one brought up the fact that nobody ate it. So really there were no notes given either.
Well, I'm sure the host, by the time everybody left, is like, "Well, that big bowl of cranberry relishes went over big. Let's not do that again."
Yeah.
PJ on the live stream. Oh, yes. Cream cheese jalapeno poppers. Are my kryptonite.
Yeah.
Yum.
Oh,
yeah. Yum.
That
yum.
Love that. Yeah. What's the other one with the pickles and the cream cheese and you wrap a ham around it?
I love those.
Redneck
they call
sushi.
It Midwestern sushi or something.
Oh, I've heard redneck sushi. Yeah.
Yeah. The ham slice. I'll do that today when I get home.
Yeah. Those are delicious.
And
as
this
well.
Is where the pickle wars come in because I will do both sweet and dill pickles. In those roll-ups.
Anyway, so we're talking about what would be on your apps Thanksgiving table. Calvin, what about you? What would you put on your all apps Thanksgiving table?
You know, I'm a big fan of a real Thanksgiving meal, so I personally probably would not go for the all apps Thanksgiving if I was planning it. But in the event that I was invited to an all apps Thanksgiving, I don't know. How would you turn mashed potatoes into an appetizer?
That's funny you were saying that because I was thinking about that. Maybe being a deep fried mashed potato balls, something like that.
Or how about this? You take strips of bacon, short strips, and you put them inside cupcake tins and you fry up the bacon that way. And then you put a dollop of mashed potatoes into the bacon that has now been fried in the cupcake.
And then... Pat, I'm gonna take the baton and you make a savory frosting.
Ooh, look at us. Okay, Jane, what would you add to it?
Oh, there we go. I don't know that. I'm very pro bacon, and I make stuffed. It's called, good heavens, what is it called? It's with mushrooms. And Swiss cheese and bacon, and I make little mushroom cups with a little pastry that's made out of cream cheese, which are very, very, very tasty.
Okay.
I could eat like 47 of those.
Yeah.
That's never good.
I feel like, though, to Calvin's point, what we're basically inventing there, Greg, is a loaded baked potato. But instead of the baked potato with the bacon and cheese and everything, you put the mashed potato in the bacon cup, a little cheese and some chives, whatever.
No, Pat, that's not how you're looking at it all wrong. You're boiling in a bag at it all. We got to look at it from Dietrich and Meg's point of view. We're not just doing that. We're deconstructing the loaded potato and reimagining it with Thanksgiving tones and holiday flavors. So I did there?
I love it.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Yeah. We are talking all appetizer Thanksgiving. What would be on your menu at 855-752-4842? We haven't even gotten to any of the sweets yet.
I think
we should have individual little cheesecakes.
Little pies, tiny pies.
Carmela sent in her cheesecake recipe too that looks awesome.
And Curtis on the live stream says buttered. I'm sorry, I don't know what this word is.
Lefse.
Buttered lefse plus chocolate calabars that cause health issues by simply walking by. Happy Thanksgiving. Totally enjoyed your show
Thank
today.
Thank you, Curtis.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
So you guys have got me running back to the O&H catalog here. It's not just the Kringles, but there's these little mini chocolate eclairs.
Yes.
Things like that.
Have you ever had their Seven Sisters? You will fight a family member for them.
John from Milwaukee texting in, taco dip is a must for me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yes. Mark from Cornell listening on WCFW, butter a dinner roll, put on turkey, two pickles from the relish tray, and ranch dressing. As a kid, this is what I ate during the main meal. Drove my mother wild watching me make it at grandma's house. That is hilarious.
And nowadays, you could go to a restaurant in Bayview, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and probably pay $15 for that exact same thing.
And they'll just name it something else.
Yeah, yes, they'll name it something else. And they'll tell you it's inspired from the young days of the chef. And you're like, that's great. Why is this $25?
Because you're not getting it in Cornell.
Exactly. Well, exactly. Nothing,
you would not charge $25 in Cornell.
We know you're having chicken. You're having deep-fried
chicken wings.
Deep-fried chicken wings is on Pat's
bar.
Menu.
Yep.
Very, very nice.
Yeah.
Time to go watch the pregame.
Yeah,
I am. Yeah, we're getting out of here. I thought I was going to get a reprieve from the store. I'm not. I still have to go to the store. So God help me. God save my soul. And
can I just say, by the way, because I have to go to the store too, because I forgot a couple of things. Thank you to all the people who were working at our grocery stores today.
Yes, absolutely.
I did not realize that many were open and how long they're open.
Yeah.
So thanks to everybody. Thank you, Pat Kreitlow, so very,
Thank
very
you.
Much for joining us on our
My
special
pleasure.
Thanksgiving show. Happy Thanksgiving to you and Sherry.
You as well.
Take
we
care,
will
buddy.
See you on Monday. Yeah. When we return, we're going to wrap it up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing or a No edition. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Mach, Calvitini on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Join us at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We were talking right before the break about toys that we played with as kids, toys that we miss. Toys that we would like to see come back. A couple of texts I wanted to get to Roger and Steven's point. I enjoyed matchbox cars. My aunt made me a map that I could drive the cars on. That's cool.
That's amazing.
My brother had a whole bunch of matchbox cars. With the whole case for him and everything.
I had a case of matchbox cars.
Did you?
Yes, I did. I'm trying to think of what else I had. I had that. He-Man had some Star Wars stuff, collections, G.I. Joe for a moment. But yeah, I remember how
you were probably on the real tail end of G.I. Joe as a kid.
No.
Oh, really?
Because G.I. Joe was really popular in the 80s with the cartoon and the small, because like the original G.I. Joes were like a foot tall. We got the tiny little ones that,
okay.
No, it's.
Because my brother had the big one and his feet turned around backwards. It was really
with the kung fu grip.
Barbies did not do that.
One of
I know. G.I. Joe had that too. Roddy from Horicon, listening on WCFW, said, I loved Color Forms and Battleship. Battleship was a game we played at our house.
Battleship was fun. I did like that game. I'm trying to think. Like there was Electronic Battleship because, you know.
Oh, that was way advanced.
Why not?
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a good game. But I still love Uno. Still love Uno.
No, really. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I'm trying, I cannot remember the name of it, but my brother doesn't remember. It was a compressor of some kind where you poured in wax and then you put the form down and it would heat it into like a little car, plastic figurines and stuff. That thing heated up to the surface of the sun.
That's like the
it's
thing.
It's amazing that we never burned down the house with that thing or gave ourselves third degree burns. I think it was called a compressor. If that rings a bell with you, I would love to hear from you, but I've been trying to think about what that thing was called for the longest time.
I think of that machine at the zoo that does the same thing, only you can't touch anything.
You only can't touch it. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we had it out in the family room.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was crazy. Okay, Calvin, it's 10:55. It's getting late. That means it's time for...
This shouldn't be a thing.
If you ever find a thing you think this should not be, send it in to Greg and me at janesays@civicmedia.us. JaneSays. JaneSays@civicmedia.us. This from the New York Post, that bastion of journalistic credibility. Brooke Steinberg has the byline, Kraft's bizarre new mac and cheese flavor is inspired by Thanksgiving, but fans aren't so thankful. For the fall is the time of year when we love to indulge in comfort food. Kraft has come out with two new favorites to create a unique meal. Kraft is out with the apple pie flavored Kraft mac and cheese, combining two of the most iconic Thanksgiving dishes to create a sweet and savory concoction. Kraft's apple pie flavor satisfies the flavor trend that feels both familiar and adventurous.
Don't read it like that. Don't read it with zest in life. Don't read it like you're going to eat it. My God, this is disgusting.
This contains the creamy cheese with cinnamon and green tart green apple notes. May seem odd to sell a sweet flavored mac and cheese. Not new. In many regions of the Americas, as well as Canada and the UK, people traditionally top their slice of apple pie with a slice of cheese. Well, yes, that is an entirely different thing. Putting a slice of cheese on your apple pie is not mac and cheese apple flavored.
Yeah, I mean, that is...
that's a food crime.
We were speaking to Liz Pancotti earlier in the show in the last hour. Again, that's comparing apples to oranges. Download the first episode and listen to it on civicmedia.us. And honestly, maybe I wouldn't try that this year because I've never had apple pie and cheese, and I'm not against the idea.
Oh, it's yummy.
Yeah, I can understand why both flavors go together well, but this whole thing, like, you're not taking... Is it macaroni and cheese... an apple, or is it apple flavored mac and cheese? So that's not it. So you're just taking the apple flavoring and throwing it on pasta. Disgusting.
That seems to be pretty much the consensus from the public. Fans not too thrilled about the Kraft mac and cheese apple pie flavor. Many declaring this invention should go straight to hell. One person said, quote, I love how they put while supplies last, like these aren't going to end up on sale out of desperation to get rid of them. Another person replied, I'm pregnant and into eating weird stuff, so I'll take one for the team. I'll try it.
Well, and that goes back. We talked about this too, the mac and cheese flavored ice cream that came out like last year.
So wrong.
It's all about shoulda, not coulda with these things, all right?
Yeah. And I think this one says it all. Person responding to the apple pie mac and cheese. Is this rage bait? Are you just trying to make us all angry? Is that what this is?
when asked for comment from a priest, if there is a God, he said, this is not what he intended with us.
That's exactly not.
It is just, I mean, there it's is wrong. No version where I eat this. And there's no version where I'm happy someone brings it to Thanksgiving, even as like, I'll try it. No.
That wraps up today's episode of...
This shouldn't be a thing.
Thank you, Greg and Calvin, and all of our engineers and everyone at Civic Media, because without you, nothing works. And thank you, traffic. You guys are saints.
Yes.
And thank you most of all for calling and texting and watching on the stream and for listening. It means the world. I hope you find some joy and you have the chance to share it. Join us tomorrow. We will be live from 9 until 11. Be safe on the roads.
Yes.
Have a very, very happy Thanksgiving and keep it right here. We have news coming up next on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll see you in the morning.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.